About a month ago, there was a professor from an Eastern university came to visit me. He told me that as he went out the door, his four-year-old daughter said, "Where are you going, Daddy?" He said, "I'm going to visit Bishop Sheen." She said, "He isn't on television now, is he?" "No," he said, "not during the summer." She says, "That's funny. Mickey Mouse is." I know one person who will be very, very happy to see me back on television. And that is a woman in Brooklyn. Because one day I was in a procession in Brooklyn. She was one of thousands on the sidewalk. And as I passed by, she says, "Glory be to God, you certainly look much better on television." Well, during the past 5 years, we've been giving you subjects on philosophy, theology, art, science, psychology, psychiatry, social sciences, and so forth. We gather them all into four volumes each year. We published a volume containing the various telecasts. And the last volume, that is to say, of last year, is just now out. This is the fourth series. And my angel has finished reading all four because he got a pre-publication copy of last year. So he now has a B.S. degree, Bachelor of Sheen. He asked me to change the format this year. So this year we thought maybe you'd be much more interested in hearing narratives and biographies. There's so many fictional and imaginative tales in the world. We thought that possibly you would like to hear some real stories of people who really and truly lived. And each week we will give you a different story. And tonight's the story of a playboy who heard the call of the desert. He was a great lover. Love is like a bird. You know, sometimes the bird is in the nest. When the bird is in the nest, his wings are confined and limited by that nest. And then at other times, the bird in the wing has the infinite horizons for his view. And sometimes the heart just rests in the nest of another creature, and at other times it's dissatisfied. And it seeks some great infinite love. And that's the story of the great lover of tonight, whose name, perhaps, you would like to know, first of all. He was a nobleman. He was born in the year 1858. His name, Charles de Foucauld. 1858 was a very interesting year in the world. That was the year, just about that time, that Darwin published his Origin of Species, Marx, his Introduction to the Critique of Political Economy, Essay on Liberty was published by Mill, Apparition of Lourdes that time, too. And in the house in Strasbourg, the very house, incidentally, where for the first time was sung by its author, Roger Delisle, the Marseillaise, was born a child who was known as the Viscount Charles de Foucauld. Traced his family back to the Crusades. His family fought with King St. Louis. He was a kind of a stubborn-looking little child, as is evident from some of his pictures. He had a religious education and kept up religion until he was 15. He belonged to an age of Renan and Anatole France and others. And the spirit of the century possessed him. He was sent to military school, the school of Saint-Cyr, later on to Saumur. He had a fortune, he had a title. He very seldom collected his military salary, because he had too much money of his own. He finished about last in his class at Saint-Cyr, and when he went to the Cavalry school, he finished 87th in the class of 87th. Did you ever hear about the boy who brought his report card home from school and he said to his daddy as he showed it to him, and marks were very low, he said, "Dad, would you like me to go up in the attic and get some of your old report cards that I saw up there?" Well, that was the kind of report card that Charles de Foucault always brought home from school. He hardly ever ate in the military dining room. He ate in restaurants. One time he liked the wine that was served. He bought all the wine there was in the hotel. It cost him $4,000. He used to bring out a number of young ladies from Paris who entertained them at his dinners. One time he dressed himself up as a young woman, and he sat in a carriage outside of the windows of the military school where the all of the wolves began whistling at him. And of course they felt very sheepish when they discovered that he was a wolf himself. Because they recognized the black mustache under his rouge. And then after he finished his military training, he was assigned briefly in France. He gave a party one night for one of the girls that he liked best. It's too bad we do not know her name, just as we do not know the name of the young woman who figured in the life of Augusta. She's just simply known as Mimi. That's plain Mimi. She came from poor parents, that we know. But she took on a bit of culture and refinement, probably from associating with him and his friends. One night he gave a party on the frozen river Meuse. And he had lanterns hanging from trees all about the river. And then at a given signal, all of the lights were extinguished, save one. And that was the purple flame of a glowing punch bowl. And some of his friends then pushed across the ice on a sled that was disguised to look like a swan. They pushed across the ice, clothed in sables and silks, Mimi. And the Viscount raised his glass and toasted the honorary colonel of the 4th Hussars, the queen of the ice, Mimi. The colonel heard about it. The colonel gave a party. Viscount though he was, he did not invite Charles de Foucault. When the party of the colonel was over, it was raining heavily. And the colonel tried to get some carriages outside to take his guests home. And what was strange about it was all of the carriages went clippity-clop past the house of the colonel, not one single carriage stopping. Lo and behold, it happened that Charles de Foucault had rented all of them to pass by empty in order to get even with the colonel. But the colonel got even with him. He called him in 8 days later and he said, "Foucault, in 8 days, you leave for Africa." One of the friends of the Viscount said, "What about Mimi?" He said, "Mimi goes to Africa too." So he sent Mimi on ahead, on another ship. And she registered on the ship as the Vicomtesse Charles de Foucault. She ate at the captain's table, naturally. All the sub-officers bowed and scraped and kissed her hand and saluted her. And all were charmed by her beauty and her loveliness. And finally, when she arrived at the port of Bone in Africa, that was one time Hippo. And 1,500 years before, there was another man there in Hippo that had a life something like this one. He was dissatisfied with his nest, too. That was Augusta. But at any rate, she arrived at Bone, and she was met there by military officers, by the mayor of the city, and by other officials who saluted her as the Viscountess, took her to a hotel where a banquet was served, and then sometime later came on the ship with the other officers and the wives of the other officers, and lo and behold, it was discovered through the wives of the other officers, that she was not at all the Vicomtesse de Foucault. That she was just plain Mimi. And women have a habit, you know, gathering up their skirts and just leaving someone behind. But Mimi and Charles laughed. He didn't mind, neither did she. Then he was sent into the desert maneuvers. That did something to him. I was in the Sahara once. It's a curious place. You look up, the stars seem so close. You almost feel that you could reach up and just pluck them right out of the sky. You become tremendously impressed with the nothingness of man, with the sovereignty of God in the face of this great, vast waste. And he was affected by it. He loved the Berbers. He began to love Arabic. And he came back from his maneuvers, and the colonel called him in. And he said, Foucault, you have a woman here with you who is not your wife. I'm going to report you tomorrow to Paris. Foucault said, why wait until tomorrow? Report today. I resign. So he and Mimi left, went back to France, Paris, then they went to Evian. When they went to Evian, Charles felt the call of the desert. And he began studying Arabic intensely and Hebrew and also the languages of Berbers. Well, Mimi didn't like to see Charles all the time with his nose stuck in a book. She got a bit tired of him. He got tired of her. So he paid her off just at the time that she found another patron, and poor Mimi disappears. We never hear of her again. It's too bad. It's been an interesting telecast for 15 minutes. But that... I know you'd like me to go on and tell more about Mimi, but that's all I know about Mimi. This isn't a telecast about Mimi anyway. It's a telecast about Charles de Foucault. Well, his life changes. Do you know what changed his life? It wasn't Mimi. It was an Irishman. The Irish are apt to turn up anywhere. And this one was Oscar McCarthy. His first name was really Oscar. Oscar McCarthy's father came over from Ireland to fight with Napoleon. As a matter of fact, his father commanded one of the regiments at the Battle of Waterloo. And then the son of this original McCarthy wandered down to the most beautiful library in the world, in Algiers. And there, for $60 a year, he became an expert on geography. And when Charles felt the call to the desert, he came back again to Algiers, and he went in to see Oscar McCarthy. And Charles said, I would like to go into the inside of Africa, among the Berbers, and into Morocco. How can I do it? McCarthy said, only 6 men of Western civilization have been in there in my lifetime. It's very dangerous. You couldn't possibly go in as an Arab, because you do not speak Arabic well enough. They would find a trace of a false accent. McCarthy said, I suggest that you go in as a Jewish rabbi. And he said, I have a rabbi friend here who knows this country well. And you travel, 2 of you as rabbis. So Foucault and Rabbi Mordecai got together. Foucault made an arrangement with him that he would give him a sum of money before they started, pay all of his expenses, give him a handsome sum when he finished, and also pay his wife a pension while he was away. Foucault studies the liturgy, the ceremony of the synagogue, Speaks Hebrew now almost perfectly. He was a good student when he wanted to be a good student. And they set out on a perilous journey. They lived in the utmost poverty. And what struck Foucault was the fact here were these Muslims, the Arabs, had no human respect. Five times a day at the time of the call to pray, they prayed. And then the Jews, so good to him and Rabbi Mordecai, they bought food to them when they slept in the synagogue. They received him into their own poor quarters. He began to love both of them, in the desert more than ever. They were gone almost 1 year. And at the end of the year, he came out. And Charles de Foucault published a very famous work in two volumes called Reconnaissance au Maroc, where he had surveyed 3,000 elevations, 1,400 square miles, determined 45 degrees of latitude, 40 degrees of longitude, made the whole scientific world his debtor. He came back into Paris. He was feted by everyone from prime ministers to jockey clubs. And in the course of his visits about Paris, he met an abbey, the curé of the Church of Saint-Augustin. Those of you who have been to Paris will recall that Renaissance church, Saint-Augustin Boulevard Haussmann. And this poor abbé was the kind of man that suffered a great deal, continuously, as a matter of fact. But it gave him that queer kind of wisdom that really comes from suffering. And Charles de Foucault met him one day, and he said, "What makes you so happy?" He said, "Because I never seek my own pleasure," said the abbé. And one night, Charles came in from a party. He was still in his white tie and tails, silk cloak, silk hat, paced the floor. His wings went at the air, dissatisfied with his nest. And he went to the Church of Saint-Augustin. He rapped the church door, the confessional door of Abbey Huvelin. He says, "Abbé, come out. I would like to talk to you." Abbé Huvelin says, "You come in. I would like to talk to you." And it was 14 years since Charles de Foucault had made a confession. He had the faith. It was covered up with the cinders, the clinkers that come with all kinds of false pleasures. By that act of humility, all the clinkers disappeared. From then on, he was totalitarian. As he'd gone to one extreme of being the playboy of Paris, from now on, he would go to the other extreme. It's now the time when the world is beginning to know something about totalitarianism. Men follow communism simply because they're sick and tired of a false milk-and-water liberalism. They want something into which to put their teeth. Something that calls for engagement, consecration, dedication. The whole self must be given and surrendered. Rather than give it to a false absolute, Charles de Foucault now decides to give himself utterly and absolutely as a bird on the wing to the true absolute. And he knocks at the Trappist monastery door. The prior says, "What can you do?" "Not very much." "Read?" "A little." Swept floors for 2 years. But the desert called him, and he asked to be transferred to another Trappist monastery in Akbez, Syria, so he would be closer to the desert. He went there, and in those days, still, you know, the Trappists never eat meat, fish, or eggs. And in those days, they never cooked the vegetables that they had in butter. Foucault was growing discontent with the Trappist rule. It was not strict enough. He said, the good Lord traveled third class. Why should I travel first class? But the church thought the Trappists were too strict, and at that particular time, the church told the Trappists to cook their food in butter. Well, when Foucault heard that, that was too much. He said, here we are on the downgrade. What's going to happen to us? Where are we going to end? Today, butter, tomorrow, what? Why does that mean so much less for the poor? And so he began writing out a rule of life that he would like to follow, which there would be absolute poverty. And he wrote in his notebook, I must be prepared to die a martyr, to be thrown in a ditch, killed painfully, brutally, unmercifully. That I must be prepared for. Then he wandered around Nazareth and the Holy Land for a while. And finally, he went into the desert. He was ordained at 42, then went first to Ben Avez. You'll see it sometime if you look at a map. That's a cue for the cameraman, incidentally. Where's my little map? There it is. It's coming. There it is. Right there. That's it. There it is. Well, he went first, you see, down to Ben Abbas, and then all the way down. That was a quick journey. All the way down to Tamarasset. And here he lived in a little mud hut that he built. Had only one room. His robe was white, had a cross on the side of it, a red cross. And here this Charles de Foucault, as you see him in the robe, he used to take care of the poor, the sick, the lame, the blind. This was now the playboy, the hermit in the desert. He gave needles to the women, seeds to the men, gave clothing. He took care of those who were suffering from malaria, typhus, and other diseases of the desert. He bought and redeemed slaves that were in the hands of some of the Muslims, and then set them free. And at night, 1 hour, 2 hours of sleep, all the rest dedicated to prayer. Just that. And he did also a dictionary for the people that he loved. A 700-page dictionary. And one night, he had come to the word Matamal, the language of the desert. And he wrote the words slowly. Ma-tama. And translated into French. To kill. There was a knock at the door. Who's there? El Madian. One of the men whom he had aided for years. El Madian said, I have some mail for you. And the hermit reached out his hand. El Madian grabbed it. 40 men grabbed him. And they pulled him out of his hut. And they threw him into a ditch. And they beat him, and then they put a gun to his temple. And he who said he must be prepared to die a martyr's death now died. Now died that way. Sometime later, the French soldiers found him there and found a monstrance with a host on the inside. The Lord had suffered the same lot as himself. And then he was buried there, and then taken out of the grave, and buried farther north in the desert at El Golea. There's a priest who was preaching the sermon. He had on exactly the same costume as Foucault. He looked down and he saw a woman who was dressed exactly like Foucault, too, and he spoke to her. Why are you dressed that way? And lo and behold, it developed that the two of them, unknown to one another, had found the rule of Charles de Foucault, and both of them had founded a community to live by absolute poverty. There are 200 men and women in the world, some in Africa, Some in the Sahara, some in France, some here in America, who are living by the rule of the playboy who became a saint. Which proves that it does not take much time to make a saint. It takes only much love. By now, and God love you.